Hi, I'm Carolyn Jay from Utah. Hi, glad to be here. We have a huge group. Maybe they'll filter in. I just want you to know before I start that I have prayed about this and turned this over to my higher power so that what I say to you would be direct from our higher power to us, and trying to step myself out of it a little bit and my own ego and my own who I am, and be an instrument for him to help in whatever way all of us could be helped. And that's my goal. I want to start today by thanking you for coming. If you have anything to say, you need to come and sign this paper before you talk into the mic. And she's got the paper right there. So we'll have some sharing and some questions and things like that. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about my story first so that you know where I'm coming from. Compulsive eater all my life, of course, and a big fat lady after having a bunch of kids. And I have some pictures that I'll send around. You'll take these. Struggling all my life to feel better with food, and I never did drink or use any other substances, so sugar and food was my substance, was the oil that kept my life lubricated, kept me moving, kept me happy. And of course, you know, it starts to make you feel worse. Any addiction does, when it gets out of control and started making me feel fat and ugly and poor self-esteem. And I tried everything, as I'm sure everyone has, to lose weight and be skinny, because if I was skinny, then life would be good. I would feel good, and life would be wonderful. And so, of course, I tried everything. When I came to see how I was on that spiral where I had lost a bunch of weight and was out of control, spiraling back up, that scary, horrible feeling where you can't stop and you're just getting bigger and uglier and out of control. And you know, here it's coming again. I'm back into the same exact cycle. And I don't know if it's going to end in 6 months or a year or 2 years or 5 years. I don't know how I'm going to end up before I get a hold of this again and start going down again. And my top weight was 252. And I was down and coming back up when I found CHOW. So I came to my first meeting, which I didn't want to go to. I'd heard about CHOW, and it was too strict and too crazy. It had that food plan. They tell you what to eat, and nobody's going to tell me what to eat. Nobody's going to tell me how to do my program, not even a sponsor. I dabbled in 12-step for a lot of years, but I wouldn't get a sponsor and really do it. But my friend from all the years of dabbling in 12-step was in CHOW, and she told me, I like it, and I can do it, and you can do it. And so I came to my first meeting completely broken down and given up and demoralized and in pain and so much arthritis that it was difficult to walk from the car to the store, and from sugar, you know, basically. And I went into that meeting. All the other times I've been to meetings and programs and classes, I really wished and hoped and really wanted to get skinny and really wanted to be better. But that day I made a decision, because I knew there was going to be a food plan. I knew there was going to be somebody telling me what to do. And I actually decided to submit and do whatever they told me. Making a decision made all the difference in the world, because I had wanted, wished, hoped, prayed, cried, groveled, begged, everything to be able to stop this obsession. But that day I made a decision. I walked in and decided I'm going to do whatever it is. And the evidence of that decision was I got a sponsor, I got some phone numbers, I actually picked up the phone. I actually went to the store and got a food scale, and I actually, you know, purchased foods that were on a food plan. That was the evidence of a decision. I actually moved my feet and picked up a phone and walked into a meeting, did physical things that showed I had made a decision. And in about 7-8 months, I'd lost all my weight. I was down to goal weight. I was slim. And now I could be happy and feel better. Everything was as I had always wished and hoped. And I always read the promises. Every meeting, I went to 3 at least a week. I always read the promises as, if you get skinny and do the tools and eat right, you have a promise of happiness and contentment in all areas of your life. That's what I heard. That's what my brain heard when I read those promises. All you do is call your sponsor, call 3 people a day, and stay on the food plan, and you have a promise of happiness and contentment. No financial worries, no prickly, awful feelings, nothing bad here. And so, lo and behold, lost all the weight I wanted to lose. And I liken it to myself being a pincushion. And I had a nice big coat, you know, a big fluffy down coat around me so that, and it was made out of sugar and frosting and, you know, just all kinds of substances that I had used to satisfy myself and to feel better and to lubricate my life. And so when I ran around as this pincushion and bumped into people and bumped into life and disturbances and things, I didn't hurt so bad. I didn't feel. But to take off that coat, that big armor, was very painful. I didn't see a lot of promises happening. I saw pain and disturbance. Like, I did this to feel better, and I did. I felt way better. I felt everything. I felt every prickle, every resentment, every little bit of anger. And I realized I didn't have an eating problem. I had an abstinence problem. I have a problem without oiling my life, lubricating it with all this stuff. I like analogies. I have another analogy. I had, I'm a computer. And I have an operating system and a way of operating, which I call living my life. And it wasn't working. It was all screwed up, and I was powerless to fix it. My operating system was out of control, full of viruses. Something was wrong. It didn't work for me. It short-circuited. It made my life miserable, made my relationships miserable. I seem like a really nice person, but... Believe me, I can ruin relationships. And I did. Mine weren't overt, you know, screaming and yelling type things. They were shutting down and hiding and isolating. And those are mean, rotten things to do to people, to turn your back and turn your feelings off on people. But I had to learn how to live without being juiced up, without being coated. So I learned that I had a disease of self. It was a disease of Carolinitis, where I wanted to live my way of life, and I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I wanted God to get behind me and help me do it. And I watched a little movie, a little Western, where some preacher came into town on his donkey, and he told the people, I handed the reins of my burrow over to God, because every time I held the reins, I ran it into the ditch. And I thought, that's such a simple way to look at it. That's exactly what I did. I run my life into the ditch, doing it my own way. But to turn my life over to God, to not be myself, what does that mean? What does that even mean? The third step says, make a decision to turn my life and will over to God. Well, here's how I picture that. Okay, here's me, the computer, that's all messed up and short-circuiting and going haywire and ruining things instead of working and operating properly. I took this computer and I gave it to God and I handed it to him. And it was full of viruses and completely out of control. And God says, okay, you give me this old operating system, I'll give you a new one. And from now on, you operate with my system. And my first thought was expressed very well in a meeting by one of our people. Well, if I turn my life and my will and everything and how I operate and all my reasons for existing over to God, what about me? What in the heck kind of life is this? the things that we turn over to God, this is my list of self that I have offered to God and given to Him. My past, my present, my future, my rights, my possessions, my relationships, my health, my happiness, my plans. Can you think of any more? I mean, I'm sure there's more. If I give all these things to God, what's left of me? But is that the scariest thought in the world? It is for a complete control freak, self-absorbed person like me. What about me? How am I going to know those promises? And I want to read the promises. Oops, not there, but here. From our big book, we read them every time we have a meeting. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. What phase? The phase where we went to a meeting, the phase where we called our sponsor, the phase where we got a food plan. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Well, I wasn't really feeling that. Being thin, it's like every thin person out there has zero problems, and I know that. But you know thin people have problems. When I turned my hard drive over to God, He said, okay, you got a new operating system, but you're full of viruses. You're full of them. And with all those viruses, all those things not working, say I'm a pincushion, all those pins sticking in you, you're not of use to me. And if I'm going to run your life, if you've given your life to me, then you're working for me now. You're doing my work. You're doing everything my way. You're giving up your way of everything. All your, whoever is you, now you're mine. You're me. Well, what good am I? If every time I do anything, it's like, ow, ooh, ee, ah. All these viruses, all these pins, all these problems, disturbances, resentments, fears. Well, how do I get rid of those? We have to get rid of those if we want to realize the promises. And somebody said, well, I got a column writing paper. Will you pass these out to more people? Because there's quite a few more that came in. Then my sponsor showed me a way to start dealing with the viruses, the pricklies, the problems, because now this is what I couldn't get that she told me. Inventory writing and 10-step writing is not so that we can solve our problems and fix ourselves. Okay, if I do that, this is another way that I can fix myself, that I can replace the eating with doing this so that then I can live my life the way I want. No, this is so we can live our life the way God wants. This is still part of giving up. And we're going to talk more about how that relates to the promises, but I want to go through what my sponsor has shown me how to live, and this goes front and back, the entire process. And we're going to start with the third step prayer, because we're doing God's work. And I want to say that together, but when we say it, I want to say we instead of I. You know, say it as a group. God, we offer ourselves, okay? God, we offer ourselves to Thee to build with us and do with us as Thou wilt. Relieve us of the bondage of self, that we may better do Thy will. Take away our difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those we would help of Thy power, Thy will, and Thy way of life. May we do Thy will always. Amen. Now in this state, we've just said this prayer, we're going to start with a prickly. We're going to start with a problem that's bothering us and getting in the way of doing God's work, and I want you to think of one. And I thought of one that I'll use, and you use one that you have, but mine is the fact that my boss was snotty about me leaving and wanting to go to convention and leaving work and kind of threatened he might fire me if I just decide to take off and go. And so that caused a prickly. I have a, you know, I have a disturbance. Get so many of those disturbances, we can't stand it, and we can't live without something. So this is mine, and you think of one of yours. And that's in the top left box. I resent or fear, or I have a disturbance over this. And now because. Why? Because he didn't care about me. He just worried about his business and threatened to fire me. That's why I resent him. Usually it's our spouse if we have one. That's usually who it always is, or roommate or whoever's closest to us. But there's going to be a lot of them. Now, before we go any further, I want to read page 47 in the 12 and 12. But in see how we slowly learned that something had to be done about our vengeful resentments, pity, and unwarranted pride. We had to see that every time we played the big shot, we turned people against us. We had to see that when we harbored grudges and planned revenge for such defeats, we were really beating ourselves with the club of anger we had intended to use on others. We learned that if we were seriously disturbed, our first need was to quiet that disturbance, regardless of who or what we thought caused it. Page 47, in the middle of the page. Okay, and then there's another on page 89. If you have your 12 and 12, on page 89, down towards the bottom. Must see how spend most of their waking hours drearily rehashing their sins of omission or commission? Well, hardly. The emphasis on inventory is heavy only because a great many of us have never really acquired the habit of accurate self-appraisal. Once this healthy practice has become grooved, it will be so interesting and profitable, yeah, right, that the time it takes won't be missed. For these minutes and sometimes hours spent in self-examination are bound to make all the other hours of our day better and happier. And at length, our inventories become a regular part of everyday living rather than something unusual or set apart. So this is talking about the spot check inventory. Now, we all know we've got to do a huge inventory, and maybe some of us have finished our inventory, and that's huge and life-changing. But I suggest and put out there to you to start with the spot check inventory now, daily, every day. Start with a 10-step inventory to learn how to write, learn how to make this easy. And then it makes our 4-step column writing so much easier. But start dealing with the disturbances that are coming every single day, every minute. And I tell the story of my son who's been sober from life-threatening addiction for 12 years, and he carries a notebook with him everywhere he goes. His wife also, and it's like, what's that notebook? It's their inventory, their spot check inventory. They do it all the time or else they'll die, they said. That's how seriously they take their pricklies, their viruses, their problems, their disturbances and resentments. Okay. Now on this paper that I've given you, move to the right column. This is from the big book. You'll see it. I think it's page 65, 63. Do you need a moment to write? She wants a moment to write the because column. And we don't want it to be real huge because we're going to break it all down in the other parts. So it's just a sentence usually, a sentence or two, the because. We're going to move over to the right, and we're going to break it down because it's real easy to be vague and general. I'm really good at that. Just like, oh, yeah, I have pride, whatever. Anyway, got that taken care of. Our self-esteem. And now the way my sponsor taught me to do this is we're talking to God. This whole work is for God, so we say, God, I am worthless. I'm a worthless employee. I'm not valued. So this is how this problem affects my self-esteem. I'm not high enough on the hierarchy that, you know, they can just let me do what I want. I have to bow and kowtow and just be this dumb low-level employee. So that's how it affects my self-esteem. And now let's go down to security. And these are my fears, what I'm afraid of. Are there extra papers down there for people that walk in? Here, take a... Okay, here's one. Welcome. Our security, these are my fears. God, I'm afraid. Now, this is where we don't want to be a therapist. We don't want to be grown-ups here. We don't want to be high-minded. This is where we're going to get all that crazy crap in our head down, over here on the right. All the childish, silly emotions and thoughts that come cropping and popping up out of our head. So I'm afraid I'm going to die and starve under a bridge because I'm going to lose my job, and I'm afraid people are going to laugh at me, and I'm afraid my boss is going to hate me. Those are my real fears, not I'm afraid of not being a top-notch employee and rising to the top level of my, you know, those are grown-up thoughts. I have down, dirty, childish thoughts here. And what my sponsor says is it's just the craziness in my head, fancied or real. Up here at the top, tell God all the crazy thoughts in my head, real or fancied. If we talk about our fears, sometimes we get down to some real deep fears of being rejected and left alone and thrown out and laughed at and people pointing fingers at us. So don't hold back on the security, on the fears. And now we'll go to our ambitions. This is our self. God, I want to have a job where I can work when I feel like it and I get paid a lot of money and I can leave anytime I want. And I want to be so valued that anytime I want something, you know, I want to leave, they just, oh, yes, sure, let us just put someone else in your place. And then you come back and, you know, just be in full status. And I want to be important. I want to be a princess. These are childish thoughts. What do I want? I mean, I'm an addict. I'm very childish. And the self in me wants some real silly, childish things. So get them all out. And this is, there's probably not room in here for everything. This is a model. You might want to use a notebook for some of these things. And now we go down to how this affects my financial relations. Well, this is my job, my problem, so it does affect me financially. I could lose my apartment. I could lose my, I could have to go bankrupt. I could, you know, not have a paycheck when I get back, things like that. So this does affect me financially. Some problems won't, but a lot of them will. Marital problems a lot of times do, because I could get divorced and be, you know, totally destitute if I don't solve this problem right. Personal relations. I am the one below it is family. So this is personal. This is how I react and act with other people. I'm not loud and obnoxious and fighting with people. I'm sneaky. So in my personal relations, I don't want people to know that I'm going to be gone or that I hate my job. So I pretend. So in my personal relations, it affects them because I become kind of plastic and sneaky and virtuous. I pretend. I become an actress. I start acting. Family relations. Are you screaming at your kids? You know, I don't have any kids at home, so I'm not screaming at them because I'm so stressed. But most problems affect our family relations. How am I going after my family now? How am I treating my loved ones? Do we have some papers for the newcomers? Here's more. There's a whole stack here. So we could leave some on the back bench or something. Sexual relations. If we're married, this might affect our sexual relations. We might, you know, not want anything to do with our husband. We might run out and be wild and crazy. We might, you know, do different things. But the way it affects me, sexual relations, is I'm a woman. And as a woman, I shouldn't have to work so much. You know, this is how sexual relations affects me in this one certain problem. I should be taken care of. I should be a princess, and somebody should just give me things without me having to work so hard for them. So that's the crazy thoughts in my head. Okay, We've gotten those things written down, and now we're going to talk to our sponsor about it. And our sponsors, we're going to fifth step it, and our sponsor is going to kind of see where we've need a little tweaking, where we've missed, and where we're being a little too vague. So we tell it to our sponsor, and they help us to move over to the middle column. And it's better done with a sponsor, or if you're good at this, you can maybe do it yourself. But now we're going to root out the defects. We've got all this crazy crap written down, all our thoughts and feelings about it. And now we're going to go for our defects. So we're going to go to the middle column where it says, where have I been? And there's no more thoughts here. What did I do? This is where we'll create our amends list. So this is stuff I did, not I thought. Selfish. Where was I selfish? Where was I Carolyn-ish? Well, I didn't tell them until a week before that I was leaving because I was afraid. So it was very selfish to throw this on my work situation that I was going to be leaving and to decide when my vacation was without telling them, you know, when I got hired. If the problem is with our husband or something like that, usually I decided I'm the queen of the universe and I decide the rules. And the rules say you can't talk to me this way. That's selfish. There's a lot of ways where we are in ourself instead of in God. Self-seeking. Where was I self-seeking in mine? That's what did I actually do? I can't think of a thing. This is where our sponsor has to help us a lot of times. See where we've actually gone out and done things, not thought. I sat there and hated him in my head. That's a thought. You didn't do anything. So you can't make amends for that. You need to say what I did. I gossiped. I went around and told everybody how dumb the boss was and how mean. That's very self-seeking. And it's very hurtful to other people to slather our negativity all over them. So that's the way I'm self-seeking the most, is I gossip. I don't confront the person. I go to everybody else and, blah, 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 and try to make myself feel better doing that. Dishonest. Where was I dishonest? I didn't tell the truth up front when I got hired, when I needed to leave, or that I had a reason that I wouldn't be there at work. I saw that they'd put me on the schedule, and rather than I waited till like the last day, so they had to scramble and find somebody for my Saturday, or the last day that I had to leave, whatever that was, rather than tell them because I was afraid. I was afraid to look dumb. I was afraid to look silly. I was afraid of a confrontation. For me, a confrontation is the worst freaking thing in the world, to have to look somebody in the face and have them have an angry face back at me. I'll lie. I'll sneak. I'll do anything to not have to do that. And it's very self-seeking. So I've got a list here of things that I actually did. Not that I thought what I did. And our sponsor can help us think of more things that we did. Okay, great. We did it. We wrote it all down. Are we done? Do we feel better? Is our life fixed? Everything's wonderful. Now turn the page over. And my sister has been wonderful enough to take the prayers out of each chapter and put them in a form where it's first person. And so it's kind of a quick way to do the prayers. I mean, if you have not read chapter 6, 7, 8, 9 in the 12 and 12, then read them as you go through this problem. But of course, after we've done it many times, we're going to just do it quickly. So step 6, we're going to take this. We've talked to our sponsor about it. We've rooted out all the things that we've done with this problem, got all the stuff out of our head. And now we're going to say the 6-step prayer. And it's right under step 6. God, help me. Do you want to say it together? Okay, let's say it together. I wasn't thinking of that, but let's do. God, help me to be willing to let go of all the things to which I still cling. Help me to be ready to let you remove all of my defects, that your will and your purpose may take the place of my defects. Amen. Okay, so now we've asked him to, this is so step by step. These are impossible things to do. We cannot do these things. But we can be willing and we can make a decision. We can get pen and paper. We can write. We can call a sponsor. We can do those things. And then we can ask God to do the things we can't, step by step and baby steps. So now we ask him to help us be willing. We're on the back of that. Okay, now we go to step 7, prayer. God, I humbly offer myself to thee as I understand you, to do with me as you would. I place myself unreservedly under thy care and direction. I admit for the first time that of myself I am nothing. That without thee, God, I am lost. I ruthlessly face my sins and am willing to have you, my newfound friend, take them away, root and branch. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We're talking about these things. We're talking about the things in this middle column, these defects that we've written down. We're trying to let God help us be willing to let go of them, have him take them away, because it's too hard for us. So now let's go to step 8 and say the prayer. God, please help me as I attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of my effort to live on self-will and run the show myself. I ask thy will be done for the other person as well as for me. If I haven't the will to do this, I ask thee until it comes. Are we seeing that we are not doing this? This isn't us. This isn't ourself doing all these things. We're asking God very specifically and directly to help us do things we can't do. Now, we've decided to sweep away the debris, which means make amends. So we're going to go to the 9th step prayer. God, give me the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the consequences may be. Help me to consult with others before I take any actions that would cause me to be sorry. Help me to not repeat such behaviors. Show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, and help me live the spiritual life. Amen. And now look down at the bottom. Discuss first with our sponsor and a professional before acting. Before we actually go make the amends, discuss the amends. Because a lot of times we'll tend to say, well, I'm really sorry that you made me do that. Or some silly amends that is not a true amends. And so we have not swept away the debris. And we've asked God to help us. So now we discuss very calmly with our sponsor and very unselfishly how we're going to make those amends and clear that away. Now, have we fixed our life? Have we fixed that part of our life? No, we have swept away a big chunk of debris so that we are useful to God, so that we can do his work, and so that we can not do what we want to and say, God, get behind me, sit beside me on this buckboard, and I'll drive, and you just shoot the Indians, and you know, be on the lookout and scout for me, and I'll drive. No, he drives. We sit in the back and throw out the extra luggage and comfort the passengers. And we go wherever he takes us. We take each day as it comes and take life as it comes. This is the painstaking work of the 12-step program. It's the everyday hard work. It's not something we do once. It's not something we do in a big inventory and then we're fixed and we're all, it's daily. It's the daily work. And now we're gonna read the promises with those thoughts in mind. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down or up the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Can you imagine that? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And this isn't make us skinny. This isn't make us, you know, get us where we decide we want to go. This isn't, you know, getting behind us and pushing us and giving us that little extra oomph to do what we want to do. He's doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, which is live life, which is be happy, have serenity, have economic security, have relationships. All these things are the promises if we give up our old life and give it to God. Step three, if we turn our life over to God and give it all to Him, give Him every stinking bit of our life and take on a new one that He gives to us. Take on a whole new operating system and then start sweeping away the debris and letting Him help us sweep away that debris. That's what we're promised. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And how do we work for them? By eating a certain way? Those are just tools. When we build a house, we get tools to build the house. But what we're doing is building a house to live in. And so the tools are not going to give us the promises. The tools help us build that house so that we can realize the promises. And the work that we do is this work of sweeping away the debris and handing it to God so that we can be useful to Him. And in that way, God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. He's soothing my pricklies. He's lubricating my life so that it works. He's doing for me what I can't do, and I cannot do my life. I cannot do relationships. I can't do finances. I can't do any of it. I'm powerless to manage my life. And God does it as long as I stay in fit spiritual condition, which means stay under His umbrella, stay under His operating system. And I want you to know I am perfect at this. Just kidding. Just kidding. How'd you know that? I want you to know that this is a daily thing. This is a daily thing for me. Whether I'm under the umbrella or I'm out, whether I'm grabbing onto the old operating system or letting go of it and using the new operating system is a daily decision and a daily way of life. And it's the most miraculous, beautiful way to live if I put myself in God's hands and live daily and hourly under His care and direction and tutelage and let Him go before me and solve the problems. One way that I look at this is I'm at a shooting range and just whatever pops up, shoot it. Just take care of the things that pop up and God will pop up the things I need to take care of and the people I need to help. And I don't have to charge around like a rhinoceros making sure life works and making sure everything happens the way I decide it needs to happen. That's how I can live in those promises. What a beautiful way to live. That's the promise of 12-step life. And I have a complete testimony of that, and that's what I want to express to you. Now I want to know if you have any questions about any of the writing. And after we have any questions, I would like to hear your shares. If you have experience with this or with the promises. And if you have any questions, you have to sign that paper and then ask questions into the mic. So do you have a question or a share or a pitch? I would love to hear from you. Of course, say your name and that. Oh, I'll tell you, I have 3 years in September of abstinence and a weight loss of 107 pounds. those are my pictures, yes. Did y'all see my before pictures, my warthog pictures?
Hi, I'm Denise P.
Hi, Denise.
Food addict, Area 4, in the spirit of the conference. Being the brilliant self that I heard some people say in conference about themselves, own that, I thought it'd be brilliant in mentioning the way I heard the what engaged me in this talk or this workshop of the uncover, discover, recover. And then I'm sitting a little bit and thinking, okay, well, we'll hear the discard, and okay, and then I'll end with putting the recover on. However higher power wants to use recover, it is as enhanced. Recovering the debris. I needed the debris piece. I didn't know how before right now to keep that pop up, as you said, active, that when the resentment will come, that I can take and do the discarding work. I would want to say with my pride, your brilliance is sticking it with the promises. You know, I saw that in the name, and there was that kind of higher power energy to that. I didn't know what it would be, and you know, the openness. I have today that pop-up to take from this workshop to change my life. What I heard in this gift of being a delegate is that, damn it, I can't have my guava nectar anymore. There's been a policy emotion about it. Indeed, these are sugars. And I was able. How am I going to live that? There's not this rage. I was able to speak to an old-timer who sat at the dais prior to taking care of how I would present about one of our policy motions. And I had yourself say that it took courage to do that, to be the countering and speak in minority. I would say at this moment that that's probably helped me got through from the 24 hours that I'm not going off about this. But today, to be able to have me write it down, that the release of that and do the pop-up, to do that. In the years past, when people would try to say, you're holding on to that a little too hard. Even at this grace of 12 years, absent clean day 10803, maintenance, you know, that it's kind of gotten gray, like brown in my brain. But to now have it clearly, even your words when you said, you can do this on your own. I've been told I can go from 4 to 9 in an hour and a half. Not 4 hours, but, and I heard that many, many, many years before CEA Howe. So to put this part in, to let the defect that I'm not afraid of anymore come up, that'll go on that paper about the guava nectar. So thank you for the uncover, discover what's in there in the guts, and the discard, and then I'm going to recover it with his assets that he gives me. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good to help. Why don't you be signing so it won't take so long when you come up? Go ahead and sign the paper so you can share.
Hi, I'm Nikki from Utah.
Talking to the mic.
Closer. Nikki from Utah.
Hi, Nikki.
Compulsive eater. Hi. Okay, I'm going to try this. So this has been really good this time. I know you, Carolyn, and still a little lost, but not nearly as lost as the last time I heard this. But what I found interesting is just 2 weeks ago, I was very enlightened to my 3 top fears. I think they were the only ones that came to me. But it was so interesting because before this started, I saw someone in my life had changed their Facebook picture And because of my top fear, controlling, I was pestered and annoyed that I wasn't there to have some say in this experience. And it's really kind of sad, to tell you the truth, that I can... It's good in the way that I'm now seeing this is really got a control on me. This control is just controlling me, and it's driving me crazy. So I'm really looking forward to using this because I think there is a great, much more sanity we can have in our lives by not having these fears. So thank you.
Thanks, Nikki.
Hi, my name is Steve R. from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you for your lead. I could see that it was sincere and genuine. By the way, you were smiling and the energy that you were using as you were sharing. So I wanted just to comment on how much I agree with your statement that just because we do this work and we write out these questions and these answers, that's really not enough. And the way that I'll reflect on that is that many, many years ago when I first heard the promises, I thought, this is fantastic. This is what I want. I want to be able to realize that God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. But I had to grapple with what is it that I can't do for myself. What I found is that no matter how bad I wanted it, if I wasn't aware where I needed help, it wasn't going to come. So you're talking about building a house. You're talking about it being more than this writing and bringing it really into our daily lives. And I can see that you've done that, and it's great to see that in somebody else. When I came into this program and I got clean from food, then I'm left with my disease, you know. And although I've done work in other 12-step programs over many years, it wasn't until the food was removed and I got that clarity. And you're talking about the pricklies. I loved your analogies, by the way. I had to be, first of all, aware that I have those pricklies, right? And then second of all, I had to become aware that there's got to be some way to use the 11th step, to use God, to be able to use these steps to have a spiritual experience so that I can deal with those pricklies. And that's something that I've grappled with for many, many, many years. And I'm telling you, I'm so glad I never gave up on that search to find a way to get a relationship with my higher power that was practical, that I could take with me throughout the day, in between meetings, in between phone calls, and really make it work in my life like an engine. I've got a mechanical engineering background, so I think in terms of, like, it's a working engine. It's running. It's well-oiled, and it functions. And I had to become aware of my feelings whenever I would feel. I had to become aware of when one of those pricklies was being pricked, basically, when I was in pain or discomfort. And one of the ways that I did that was a sponsor years ago suggested. I would wake up in the morning, and my mind would be filled with toxic messages about, you know, how worthless I am and how I'm broken beyond repair. That those were some of my pricklies. And he said to me, what might help is if you get up in the morning and you give voice to that voice. You write out those messages first person on paper. You are a, or I am, one of those two. And really get all that toxicity out on paper and then be able to see it as something separate from who I am. In other words, it was a practice that helped me witness myself. And when I saw how powerful it was, and it just, maybe I did it for about 2 or 3 weeks to really get it out, I then was able to go to God and be able to say, I really do need help with this. I've carried this stuff with me all my life. And as I've got that engine going, the promises became more and more apparent in my life because I found a way to be able to give those to God in a way that gave me inner peace and be able to really enable me to see how to handle a lot of different situations. But it was the awareness that I need that help. It was the awareness of the pain. I don't think without the pain, I would have made the progress. And I'd probably, it sounds like you're probably in the same position with all the different awarenesses that you had about this example. So I'm looking at pain as a gift, but I can look at that as something that's a burden. If I look at it as a gift, it's like it's information that helps inform me where I need to do my work and how powerless I am over those things. We're not powerless over a lot. I think we have a lot of power. We have the power of choice. That's one thing you talked about. Every moment of every day, we have the power to make the decision of what source are we going to go to? Are we going to go to our egos or are we going to go to God? And if it's not expansive and light, if it's dark and limiting and full of fear, it's not coming from God. So, thanks.
Awesome, thank you. Have her write your name.
No, I can't.
Oh.
I can just tell you my name, still but if somebody writes it, then that's up to them. So, I'm Jules.
Oh.
Am I allowed to speak? Yeah.
After her.
But
Hi, I'm Woody. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Woody.
I really appreciated the computer analogy. I had so many viruses in a computer, I finally had to turn it over to a tech who had it 10 days. And it came back, and guess what? It wasn't perfect. And the things that were still not serving me were things that he would tell me to go into the control panel, like I need an external control panel. My whole life is a control panel. And he would say, well, there's this virus and this virus and that horse. I say, I have herds of horses in there, not just viruses. But I would have to go into the control panel and identify in different places where I would travel the things that were not acting correctly due to my unconscious instruction to the computer. And he would tell me how to delete them or remove them. And I'd be scared to death the whole time that the computer was going to just crash completely. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I was willing to listen to direction. So your analogy, this is so what I need to be doing for myself. Because I assume when something comes up, even if I turn it over to my higher power, if I remember to do that, there's still this default part of me that says, but I know how to handle this. And this was a situation where I had to completely give up that basic fundamental default thinking, but I really know how to handle this. It's just a matter of finding out where it is in me to figure it out. And so, thank you, because now I get to see what I really need to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Julie.
Speak in.
Oh, I'll speak really loud. Okay. So first of all, thank you so much. I really love the thing about feeling better, because I always think about feeling better as feeling good better, like better as opposed to worse. But now I feel, we do feel better. We feel pain better. We feel everything better. So that's wonderful. So thank you for that shift. I really appreciate that. I wanted to talk about the concept of clearing away the wreckage of past, and also about not regretting the past nor willing to shut the door on it. And I do have a question about that. Right now, the resentment that I'm working on, or the character defect. So I had been raising a stepdaughter since she was 6 years old, and we had a very, very bad falling out. I said a lot of things that I regret saying, because it's damaged our relationship deeply. And so I will have some amends to make at some point once I go through all of this. But I don't know. I mean, I have such regret for what I've said. And I know it's like, when I say close the door on it, I think, well, you know, you make your amends and then you put it behind you. You, like, close the door on it. Is it saying that we don't regret the past because we learn from it or we grow from it? I'm not sure, because, I mean, one of the things that kind of push towards, I guess, making amends is the regret for how I've mismanaged my life, or... And that's part of that process. So I just was wondering, it's more of a question for you to follow up on that with realizing the promises.
Well, it sounds to me like you're getting ahead of yourself. Mm-hmm. You haven't even done the work yet, mm-hmm. and the amends, and you're already wondering how that's going to play out in regretting the past or not regretting the past. I say let go of all that ahead and just do the baby steps and see how it feels when you get there. Because I have a lot of past to regret. It's just sickening and disgusting. And I'm so grateful to be a compulsive eater and to have been through everything I've been through. But I have that perspective after the fact, not while I'm still working through it. So I totally believe that's one of the promises, but I think wait and do the steps to get there. If someone else has something to add to that in their share, they can, but that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you, you need to sign in to share, sign your name.
Thank you.
Judy W., compulsive eater.
Hi, Judy.
I apologize for being late. I wanted to support a friend that was leading a meeting. What I would like to comment on is humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. One of the privileges of staying abstinent is being a sponsor to others, and I always feel like I benefit so much more than my sponsees maybe do from me. And one of my sponsees is currently working on steps 6 and 7, and she said in her writing it occurred to her that she has all these character defects, and she's been humbly asking God to remove them. And recently in her writing, it occurred to her that evidently those character defects that God hasn't removed yet aren't standing in the way of her being useful to him. And I was so pleased that she was able to share that with me, and I thought I'd like to share it all with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm Lee, and I'd like to share on that thought about not regretting the past. You know, I came into this program with a lot of shame about some of the things that I've done in the past, just some very, very poor decisions. And what I've found, it comes with sharing with people in the program, but especially when you start sponsoring and people are going through the fourth step, that God uses everything. And that although not always, a sponsee hasn't always had the same experiences that I had, that sometimes sharing with them some of the things that God has helped me walk through helps them realize that, you know, I don't know if we all, you know, I grew up in a Leave It to Beaver family. We worked harder at looking like we had our act together than actually getting our act together. And so this idea of that I walked into in adulthood of trying to look like I had my act together has cost me tremendously. Because anybody that gets to know me knows that, I mean, she's got some real problems, but she's, you know, she's moving forward with it, so let's try to support the kid. And one thing that that has helped me a whole lot is trying to look at my childhood and look at the messages that I got as a child, because as children, we're excellent observers, but we have really poor filters. And so our parents may not have said things verbally to us, but we picked up these messages to survive in the situation in which we were in. And the messages that I got was, look like you're perfect, even if you're not. You know, we have an image to protect here. You know, that kind of thing. We don't air our dirty laundry. You know, I grew up in the South. All these messages were very powerful, especially to little girls. You know, being misbehaving was referred to as being ugly. Okay, so that was another message I got. So expressing my opinion also frequently was interpreted as being ugly. So I had to let go of the messages that as a little girl I was receiving, you know, of trying to be perfect, trying to look like I have my act together. And that led to one of the things I brought into this program was trying to look like I was right all the time. And it was a costly experience, especially for my children. So I hope that might be helpful to someone else. And thank you so much for your share. It's just been very meaningful to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi. I did. Hi, good morning. I'm Beth, a compulsive eater.
Hi, Beth.
I'm happy to be here, and thank you, Carolyn, for your lead and share. I have maybe a simple or concrete example of God doing for me what I can't do for myself as I work the steps in this program. These last few days, I've been a delegate at the conference, and it's been amazing to be around incredibly recovering people as my primary meetings are the phone bridge, and I've met, in the last 3 years of recovery, I've met 3 people face-to-face from C-House. So being kind of overwhelmed by amazing, beautiful, recovering people is really exciting. But one of the character defects that I struggle with is not good enoughness, you know, poor self-esteem and body image and all these things that I'm sure nobody knows about, nobody else can relate to. But for me, the body image was really kind of getting to me yesterday, because I started to compare myself to those around me, and I'm like, oh, I'm wearing pants, and I have stains on my pants, and I'm wearing tennis shoes, and you know, there's all these other people around me in, you know, business clothes and professional, and they look so great, and what's wrong with me? And so I was writing about it during one of the breaks, and as you know, looking about comparison, and you know, knowing that. I am who I am because of who God created me to be, and it's what's on the inside and not on the outside. You know, and I know that cerebrally. I know that in my head, but sometimes it's hard to connect, you know, my head and my heart with that concept that, you know, I'm wonderfully and fearfully made, and God created me exactly who I needed to be, and beauty comes from the inside. So I was just kind of just writing that and getting that out. And then... interestingly enough, a few hours later, Ray Z came and spoke to Gellert's delegates. And one of the first words she says, "You are all so beautiful. You have no idea how beautiful you are." And I was like, yeah, I am beautiful. and then after the conference was finished, I walked around and met some people and then got some great hugs and, you know, some affirmations like, "Oh my gosh, Beth, I've, you know, heard your voice, but you're so beautiful." And I'm like, wow, you know. And then I went over to the boutique and, you know, was kind of going through some of the clothes. And this dress that I'm wearing, this cute little size 6 sundress, was at the boutique. And, you know, so it was fun to be able to wear, you know, a casual dress because, you know, I was like, I can't wear a fancy dress or fancy pants because I only brought sandals and shoes. But anyway, I mean, it's, this is God providing this little thing. And so it's just, I think, for me, important to see those little miracles. And God is everywhere and always present. And sometimes I get overwhelmed by taking these inventories because I feel like I've been working through the same issue, you know, with my life and my job and my career for years. And it's like there's no resolution. And so for me to take those little victories, those little baby steps, and to know, you know, God is working, sometimes it's hard for me to see the big picture. Well, it's really hard for me to see the big picture, but just staying focused in the present and knowing God is working through me when I let God do the work. So, you know, that balance of me taking the little steps and then leaving the consequences to God. And finally, you know, I read my reading this morning to my sponsor, and you know, her words of wisdom of, you know, to compare is to despair. So just for me to be fully confident in who God created me to be and just rejoice in that. So thank you all for being part of my program in recovery. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, Carolyn. I'm Susie. Q from Utah.
Hi.
And I have just a question. How does doing this spot check inventory look on a practical level, day to day? You're at work, you know, you get something that's disturbing. How does this look to your son who carries the notebook? On a practical level, do you wait till you scribble a note, come home, write about it? Do you talk to somebody? What does it look like?
In the big book, it has what it calls a grudge list. When you think of one, you keep a list. And I guess that would be in your notebook, if you carry a notebook. Just write down the disturbance. And then when you get alone, you get home, usually like when you go to bed at night and you think over your day, and that is when you would do that on a practical level.
And then would you call your sponsor and say, "This is what's up," and
after you've
and
written,
give it to your sponsor?
Then
as
you
well as to God.
Call your sponsor the next day or next time you can, or you might have 3 or 4 when you call your sponsor to get through.
Okay.
But yeah, just write down, have a list, a running list of things that have come up, and then you write about them when you get time to sit down.
And then talk to your sponsor.
And then talk to your sponsor when you get time to talk to them, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Carolyn.
Hi,
Thank you so much. I'm Leanne. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm from West Covina, California. And, you know, I was so concerned about all my defects of character. And I worked with my sponsor on a very thorough basis. And she said, you know, I think you've got the wrong attitude. I said, but I do want them removed. And she said, no, you don't. What you want removed is what you don't like about you. But your higher power is the one that will make the decision if it's going to be useful or not. And some of those defects will be turned into assets. So don't ask for all of them to be removed. Ask for the ones that he feels is not useful to you for his purposes to be removed. And when I did that, I could live in peace and I could live in serenity. And I've tried to pass that on because I'm not a judge of what needs to be removed. It's my higher power if I'm turning my life and my will over to him today. Thanks for letting me share.
For those that came in, you need to sign the paper to share. But we still have some time. Let's see. We still have about 15 minutes.
Hello, my name is Joyce. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Joyce.
And thank you so much for this workshop and for your analogies. I really, really appreciated that. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Goodness. Okay, I will continue talking. You know, it talks in there about God removing the defects of character, and I guess that's one thing I want to kind of, you know, get in my mind is that when I do this inventory and I look back, is I don't have the power to remove my own defects of character. And sometimes I think I want to remove it, but I really don't. And my example is worry. And I thought that worry, by showing worry, was showing that I really cared for somebody else. But worry is not a good thing. It's a part of fear, which it talks about in the big book. It may as well be classified with stealing. You know, it does that much damage in our lives. And this became real evident. My cat that I had for 13 years died. We got two new kittens, and one of the kittens wasn't thriving. And I went to pieces. I was worrying about her day and night. I was losing sleep. I finally had a panic attack in Walmart. I don't have panic attacks, and very, you know, rarely. I went in the car and cried, and I just cried out to God, please take away this worry from me, you know. And it wasn't helping. It interferes. It doesn't make you act any better in the situation. And, you know, God, please remove these defects of character, you know, so I can be a better use, you know, to ever what situation I'm in. And from that day on, that was, let's see, she's two now. It's a year and a half ago. I came in to see how shortly after that. And she got better. We found something to help stimulate her immune system, and she started thriving and eating and, you know, doing better. But I keep that in mind, is that worry doesn't help. I'm good when there's a major crisis. Crisis happens, I take care of it. But, for example, if I think there's something wrong with me medically, I look up the drug names that I may have to take and all the side effects that it will cause, and I don't even know if I have it yet. I mean, that's how far ahead of myself I get in worrying, you know, before I find something out. So I think when you become, at least for me, when I became desperate enough for a defect of character and realized it really was in the way, ask God, you know, humbly, please take this away. And it's not completely gone. You know, I'm human. There's still a certain amount of concern, but I try to keep it to concern as opposed to worry, 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 and worry myself sick, no matter what's going on. And anyway, I really appreciate, like I said, your analogies and all the shares that we heard here today. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Anybody else want to share? If not, I think we're done. We finished early. Have a wonderful day. May I see you on the road to happy destiny.